Well, good morning. Thank you, Phil. I thought maybe you wanted me to get up and lead the last song, and that terrified look on my face. Of course, you would have all been just as terrified, but thank you. Thank you, Ken. All right, well, let me go ahead and invite our young ones. You are just... Yay! Need I say more? Yes, there is a barbecue, and it's coming up soon. I'm aware of that, so I will try to take that into account here this morning, and pretty soon we will get out there and enjoy that time together, breaking of bread and all of that together. But for now, if you are in here, let me invite you to turn to the Gospel of Matthew, page 684, if you're grabbing a pew Bible. Matthew, we're going to go to chapter 5 and pick it up today in verse 27. We're going to read through 32, and then we'll pray, and then we'll get to work, see what it has for us. So this is Matthew chapter 5 and verse 27. Jesus here is speaking. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And verse 30, if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. 31, it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, makes her the victim of adultery. And anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. And on those fun words, let's take a moment and pray. God, we do thank you. We thank you for, albeit maybe we don't quite realize it, we do thank you for these words. And Lord, I pray now that as we dive into this, that you would speak to us. That you would, as always, be in and over and under all through my words, and that we would truly hear your heart today. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. The day is cold and dark and dreary. It rains and the wind is never weary. The vine still clings to the moldering wall, but it every gust, the dead leaves fall, and the day is dark and dreary. My life is cold and dark and dreary. It rains and the wind is never weary. My thoughts still cling to the moldering past, but the hopes of youth fall thick in the blast, and the days are dark and dreary. Be still, sad heart, and cease repining. Behind the clouds is the sun still shining. Thy fate is the common fate of all. Into each life some rain must fall. Some days must be dark and dreary. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, 19th century poet. He captures, I think, the reality that is ours. Right, and we get it, right? Things break, our bodies wear out, the car gets a flat tire, the bills need to be paid, the phone call from the doctor, the report from that test, our emotions, they crumble, marriages, they struggle. Our friends, they disappoint us, we disappoint our friends. Anybody depressed yet? But Longfellow observes, right, that into each life Right? This reality, as we've seen, right? That life is hard. Relationships are difficult. Noting as we have, and you can always go back and listen to previous messages, either through the website or through iTunes podcast. But noting as we've seen really over these last 2 months, the Apostle Paul over and over and over again pushing back against what he calls division, schisma in the Greek, disunity, pushing back against all the sorts of ways that we go sideways, all the ways that we are at odds with one another, pushing back against all of the conflict and the dispute and the disagreement. But not only Paul, Jesus himself speaks into this reality, and we can think specifically back to last week, right? When Jesus reminds us of that ancient law, do not murder. And Jesus is down with that, right? Do not do murder. But he says it's not just whether or not there's a dead body, right? He goes on to say, he says, but I tell you, do not be angry. Do not be angry, orge in the Greek. Not speaking here of a momentary sort of rising up of emotion, but really speaking of holding on to a grudge. And so Jesus, he pushes back here and he says, no, he says, yes, don't do murder, absolutely. And yet also don't nurse a grudge. Don't hold on to a resentment. Don't embrace a bitterness. Right, and remember from last week, John the Baptist and King Herod, right? Jesus is speaking into the midst of all kinds of brokenness and betrayal. He's speaking into all of the conflict and the dispute and the disagreement. He's speaking into all of the life is hard and relationships are difficult. And Jesus, he reminds us, right, that in the fullness of the color of life, with all of its shades and hues and tones, in the midst of the fullness of the color of life, Jesus reminds us that every person has value. You have value. That every person has worth. You have worth. Right? That each one belongs. Right? Every person matters. You matter. And then as we read today, Jesus goes on, picking it up again, verse 27, we read, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. And so again, Jesus, he takes us back to Moses, back up on Mount Sinai, back to the two stones, back to the 10 words. And he quotes for us from Exodus 20 and 14, from the seventh commandment, where it reads, you shall not commit adultery. But Jesus, he doesn't stop there. He goes on to say, but I tell you, right? I say to you, what is that ancient pedagogical formula? It was common in that day. A rabbi would speak of a law or a tradition, right? Say something to the effect of, you have heard that it was said, and then would go on to quote an authority. Right, you've heard that it was said, but Rabbi Shammai, but Rav Hillel. Right, you've heard that it was said, but then quoting an authority. But notice Jesus here, he doesn't quote another authority. Right? He says, but I say to you, I tell you. Right? Jesus is the authority. And so in effect, he says, listen up, pay attention. I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And so in effect, Jesus, he goes on to another example here, gives us another example. This one's regarding adultery. Keeping in mind from the scholar William Barclay, he writes, so serious a view did the Jewish teachers take of adultery that the guilty parties could be punished by nothing less than death. And so it's into that kind of a context then. Jesus says, but I tell you, right, with authority, I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And so In a way similar to last week, Jesus steps into that kind of space. Right? He says, no. This is about more than is there a nude body. Right? Last week it was, this is about more than a dead body. Here he says, this is about more than a nude body. He said, this is a matter of the heart. Yes, this is about outward behavior, and yes, okay, sexual activity, right? Jesus is there. But he says, deeper than that, the way that we view one another, the way that we see one another, that matters. Now, to walk through this, I want to get at what Jesus is saying here. Noting again, he begins, anyone who looks at a woman lustfully, that word anyone means anyone. Pause, it's each, every, all. And so it means everyone. He goes on then to say who looks at. Looks at comes from blepo. Blepo means to see with one's eyes. It means to turn the eyes, to look upon, to gaze. It also carries with it this sense of directing your focus, of setting your imagination. And so it's this idea of to consider or to contemplate or to weigh or to examine. And point being, Jesus here, he is speaking something of more than a glance. He is speaking of something more than a noticing, right? There's some intentionality here behind this word. And so he's speaking here of someone who looks and continues and keeps on looking. He's speaking of someone who is gazing and continues and keeps on gazing. Right? Of someone who is turning their attention, focusing, right? Is setting their imagination, considering, contemplating, weighing, imagining, examining. I tell you that anyone who blepos at, right? Anyone who gazes at, who turns their attention, their focus, their imagination, their examination, he goes on to speak of then a woman from the Greek gyne. And here it can be translated either as woman or as wife. I think that wife is the more accurate translation, namely because in the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, we go back to the 10th commandment, which says, do not covet. And there it's what is the same word here for lust, which is epithumeo. From author, historian, professor Jason Staples, he writes, in keeping with this distinction, the 10th command, and with that then the emphasis Jesus is making here, specifically forbids the action of coveting, best understood as forbidding fixing one's desires upon obtaining something that is not rightfully one's own. Which I think in turn takes us back to sort of the woman-wife to what I think is the better translation, and that is woman. To translate this as a woman. Here, speaking of adultery, but in that I want us to get that the deeper layer here is about power and about control. This is about power and it's about control, which is why Jesus then goes on in rather dramatic terms. Right, these very fun words, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Now, Jesus, he is not advocating self-mutilation. He is pressing home the seriousness of engaging others as less than. The seriousness of engaging others as less than human. In other words, yes, this is about adultery, And it is all about power and control. It is about all the ways that we diminish and devalue and disparage, all the ways that we disregard another. From the scholar Craig Keener, Jewish men expected married Jewish women to wear head coverings to prevent lust. Single women were exempt since they were needed to find a husband. Jewish writers often warned of women as dangerous because they could invite lust. In fact, the prevalent thought was that when it came to lusting, it was the responsibility really of the woman. It was put on the one who was being lusted after. It was the historian Josephus. He writes in Antiquities about David and Bathsheba. He says, "But David fell now into a very grievous sin, though he were otherwise naturally a righteous and a religious man, and one that firmly observed the laws of our fathers. For when late in an evening he took a view round him, he saw, from the roof of his royal palace, where he used to walk at that hour, he saw," right, we can think blepo, "a woman washing herself in her own house. She was one of extraordinary beauty, and therein surpassed all other women. Her name was Bathsheba. So was he overcome by that woman's beauty, and was not able to restrain his desires, but sent for her and lay with her, had sexual intercourse with her, lay with her, was not able to restrain, was not," in today's language, we can think of victim blaming, right? Which by definition is full of disregard. And so Jesus, he presses into that sort of disregard, right? And notice Jesus, in context of Jesus, he puts the responsibility for epithumeo, the lusting, the coveting, he puts the responsibility on the one who is doing the lusting, the coveting. He continues, verse 31, again, "it has been said," and here he refers to a passage in Deuteronomy, "anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, makes her the victim." Interesting language, right? Think power and control. "And anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery." So here Jesus, he speaks of divorce. He puts it within the context of adultery. Within that, he puts it in the greater societal context. As the scholar James Edwards writes, "power over marriage and divorce lay predominantly in the hands of men. A woman's place depended largely on her relationship to a man." Meaning again, yes, okay, adultery, divorce, this is about that, absolutely. And yet, the deeper layer, this is about power and control. It's about all the ways that we diminish and devalue and disparage and disregard another. The scholar Ben Witherington, he says, "Jesus' teaching on divorce is clearly a statement about the status of others. We could say of the other. Easy divorce of women with young children means abrogating responsibility for caring for these most important members of society. They are to be safeguarded as vulnerable members of the community." Now keep in mind, and again, we saw this last week, that again, Jesus, he's speaking these words into a society, a culture, a world of brokenness and betrayal. As Paul puts it, into all of the conflict and the dispute and the disagreement and the disunity. We could say into all of the hurt and the heartache. From the scholar David Garland, he notes, "somewhere in each and every relationship that experiences adultery and or divorce, something has gone wrong." And here, noting that each one of us, right, be it ourselves or our parents, or family, or friends, or maybe a neighbor, every one of us has been impacted, right, by brokenness. Every one of us has experienced that hurt and that heartache. And Jesus, notice, he steps into our common fate. Right? He steps into to each life. He steps into all of the life is hard and relationships are difficult. He steps into what here is paradigms of power, systems of control, of oppression. And Jesus says, the way that we see one another, the way we see the other, that matters. Right? All the ways that we care for one another, all the ways that we express mutuality and equality, that matters. Right? The way that we connect together in relationships, that matters. Right? The way we orient our hearts toward one another, that matters. Seeing others as fully human, as valued, as loved, as esteemed, right? Working through our differences and our disagreements. Jesus says that matters. And so adultery and divorce, yes. But the deeper layer here is what Jesus says really matters. Right? That it's a matter of the heart, right? Of your heart and mine. Inviting us then to consider, right? Who do I see as less than? Who do I see maybe as less than human? Right? Maybe think of it this way. Maybe think of it as, who do I look at in a disparaging or demeaning way? Maybe it's someone I don't get along with. Maybe it's someone with whom I'm at odds. Maybe it's not just a someone. Maybe it's someones, right? That group, that ethnicity, that race, that age, that gender. Right? Maybe it's those that don't walk like me, talk like me, think like me, look like me, do life like me. Who do I devalue, discount, diminish, disregard? Who do I see as less than? And then we could ask, in what ways do I use power and control? In what ways do I use power and control? Maybe like we read in this text, in this teaching, maybe we use blame. Maybe it's guilt or shame or manipulation. Maybe it's denial. Maybe it's rejection. Right? In what ways do I use power and control? In what ways do I seek power and control over another? And then with that, on the kind of flip side of that, is, do I live with a deep care and compassion for others, for all others? Do I live with a deep care and compassion? Do I value all others as being created in God's image? Do I see all others? All others as being created in God's image? Do I offer a helping hand to the more vulnerable around me? And then we'll wrap it up. In what ways can I offer love and esteem to another? What would it look like this week for me to value another? What is one thing I can do to show regard to another? Even more, this is about the condition of your heart and mine. Right? You have heard that it was said, but I tell you,